Yep. So good morning, everyone. So as Saraha says, my kind of job this morning is to talk about Padmasambhava, historic, poetic, and practical. You could say the subtext behind this talk is that last year when we did Padmasambhava Day, you could have theoretically argued that you could have come to a whole day and had no idea why anything was happening or what was going on. So this year, we've got this talk so that if anyone says, what the hell is going on and why are we here? We can say, well, you either came to this talk or you should have come to this talk. So that's why, that's my job, as it were, to justify our existence. So yeah, but this, you know, this title, like the historic, the poetic, the practical. Although I have, like, in some ways you could ask, you could say there's a more basic question that it's like, How do we meet people? How do we meet people? Like, in a sense, that the purpose of this day is to meet Padmasambhava. But how do we meet anyone? What happens? I find that a very interesting question. So you could say, well, how we meet people is, well, there's all kinds of different ways. Sometimes we're introduced. Yeah. So sometimes we're introduced to someone by someone else. And in the case of Padmasambhava, you could say, well, that's the position we find ourselves in. We're introduced to Padmasambhava. And we're introduced by Ogyen Sangharakshita. So that, I'm just going to spend the first few minutes just kind of talking about that, really. Because you could say, most of you are probably aware of this, but you know, the True Ratna Buddhist community has sort of significantly positioned itself more in relation to the historical Buddha over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. You know, there's quite a big emphasis on that. But here we are, kind of exploring Padmasambhava. So, like, why are we doing that? And you could say the reason we're doing that is because of Sangharakshita. Sangharakshita, the founder of our Buddhist tradition, kind of wants us to do this. But why does he want that? In a way, we'll find that's the journey over the course of this talk. But first of all, let's start off with Sangharakshita's meeting with Padmasambhava. So some of you have heard this before, but some of you won't. I had never seen an image of Padmasambhava before, perhaps not even a painting. As I entered the temple, all the greater was the shock, therefore, when I saw in front of me, 3 or 4 times larger than life, the mighty, sedent figure of a semi-legendary founder and inspirer of the Nyingmapa tradition. A skull cup in his left hand, a staff topped with skulls in the crook of his left arm, and the celebrated wrathful smile on his moustached face. All this I took in instantly, together with the lotus hat, the richly embroidered robes, and the much smaller flanking figures of his 2 consorts, 1 Tibetan, 1 Nepalese. Having taken it in, I felt it had always been there, and that in seeing the figure of Padmasambhava, I had become conscious of a spiritual presence that had in fact been with me all the time. Though I had never seen the figure of Padmasambhava before, it was familiar to me in a way that no other figure on earth was familiar. Familiar and fascinating. It was familiar as my own self, yet at the same time infinitely mysterious, infinitely wonderful, and infinitely inspiring. Familiar, mysterious, wonderful, and inspiring it was to remain. Indeed, from then on, the figure of the precious Guru, Guru Rinpoche, was to occupy a permanent place in my inner spiritual world, even as it played a prominent part in the spiritual life and imagination of the entire Himalaya region. So Sangharakshita, well, was obviously struck, touched by the figure of Padmasambhava. You see, we have these images of Padmasambhava here, which you might want to, if you're not familiar with the, you know, just the figure of Padmasambhava, you might want to have a bit of a closer look at later. So even as we meet people, there's all these different aspects to them, aren't there? Like, as you're going through that, his description of Padmasambhava is, you've got all these different bits, haven't you? You've got the physical appearance, how that makes us feel in response to that physical appearance, the backstory, the information and knowledge that we have about it, the layers of interpretation about what all these different aspects of the appearance mean, represent. So I'm just going to try and kind of pull some of those out for you. And then kind of evoke, and it may be reminders why Padmasambhava is important within the True Ratna Buddhist community. So let's start off with the backstory. For some of us, this might be not important, but for other people it could be very important. So this first phrase, semi-legendary. So what does semi-legendary mean? Does it mean that he's made up and never existed, or does it mean that he's real? And where does he sit in between in those two places? If you look on Wikipedia, in a sense it's quite interesting, but they're saying there's two lines you can go down. So it seems that we can say with a reasonable, well, we can say with certainty that Buddhism went to Tibet and stayed there. It was successfully brought to Tibet sometime in the 8th century. And there was a king called Trisong Detsen who was the person who made that happen. Yeah, we can say that definitely happened because Buddhism is in Tibet today. And you can say that there was this monastery that this king Trisong Detsen was trying to get built, the Samye Monastery, which is the first Tibetan monastery in Tibet, which got built. And we can say with some certainty that it was some guy called something like Padmasambhava who was important in that happening. From a strictly historical perspective, that's probably more or less all you can say. Although you can also say, and this is equally significant, that this character influenced the minds and lives of hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, even millions of people from that day forward. And for us, that's equally significant. That is a sense of realness. You know, people are real. Things are real to the extent to which they make a difference. So Padmasambhava does exist because he makes a difference in people's lives. So pretty much all what we know about Padmasambhava is based upon the insignificant parts on a famous text called The Life and Liberation of Padmasambhava, which was discovered in the 12th century, so 400 years after the life of 400 years after Padmasambhava and Buddhism came to Tibet. This story, which we have translations of, there's a translation in the library, emerged. And that story tells us a lot about what we know about Padmasambhava. Yeah. So what do we know about Padmasambhava? Well, the really short version is that this king wanted Buddhism to be established in Tibet, and it wasn't working. Yeah, like either demons and local spirits were stopping it happening, or smallpox was devastating the region. Or maybe they're the same thing, who knows. He tried to get some kind of relatively conventional but very good Buddhist characters from India in to bring Buddhism to Tibet, and it didn't work. And then this Buddhist monk called Santarakshita said, "What you need is Padmasambhava." And he went off and got him, and Padmasambhava came and sorted it all out. Padmasambhava, it seems, in this sort of semi-legendary sense, was a wild mystic shaman meditator tantric bunny, and he did the job. Basically, he did the job. He stayed in Tibet for a short period of time, and then he left and went somewhere else, and nobody knows where he went. But as I say, he left a really deep mark on the minds of the people of Tibet. He was important. So in terms of if you really want to know the kind of like the detail of Padmasambhava's life, that's pretty much all you're going to get. You can read The Life and Liberation of Padmasambhava. It's a interesting historical document. It's a very vivid evocation of the meaning of life, you could say. I'll come back to that at the end. But yeah, in a sense, it's like I was thinking about this morning. It's like, in a sense, I'm not the world's best qualified person to give this talk. So it's like, I really don't kind of care who Padmasambhava was. It's not that important to me. So forgive me for my sort of just like, you know, he was some guy. He went to Tibet. Tibet's Buddhism started there. He went somewhere else. Whatever. Do you know what I mean? I suppose, and this is the point where I'm making about how when we meet people, different things interest and motivate us. So for some people, you know, I've got friends who are deeply interested in biography. You know, they love it. They love reading historical biographies. They love understanding where people came from and what they did and what happened next. Really valuable, but that's, yeah, not where my energies lie. So how about his appearance? Because that's another way, you know, like these first impressions we get. So somebody says, oh, this is Padmasambhava, and he went to Tibet and he made it happen there. That's one way of being introduced to him. So another, in a sense, more direct way of being introduced to someone, you simply see them. You know, that's what happened to Sangharakshita. You just saw this figure in the gloom. It's funny, that reading, that like little excerpt from, and I remember it. It's like there's a much more vivid sense of like the, you know, coming out of the darkness. This figure, you just suddenly just see something. Life's a bit like that, isn't it? Sometimes we just suddenly see people, we notice them. So if we look at Padmasambhava, well, what do we notice? This kind of very richly, elaborately clad figure. Like if you can, so here's Padmasambhava, and here's the Buddha. You know, there's quite a difference, isn't there? You know, like the Buddha's got a robe and a stick. Padmasambhava's got like brightly coloured robes, you know, a big stick, you can't see it there. He's got a vajra. You can see it on the statue here. He's got a vajra, he's got something else in his other hand, he's got earrings, he's got a hat, he's got all this stuff. So it's very rich in symbolism. Very full. You know, sometimes it's that's the nature of an archetypal figure or a figure which we make significant. You see significance on all these aspects of their beings. In a sense, for being in love could be a bit like that, can't it? Or when we're besotted with someone, we see them and we're just like, everything about them is important. You know, we're kind of like, oh, you know, look, you know, you are special, you are unique. Only you have eyes. I've only ever seen your eyes before. They're so... whatever colour they are. So you could say we're a bit like that with Padmasambhava. It's like, oh, only you. In his case, he is a bit more extreme, isn't he? Only you have a stick with three severed heads hanging off of it. That's more likely to be true, actually, isn't it? It's like, you know, wandering around with a stick with three severed heads hanging off of it. So yeah, so he's got the accoutrements for the items of an advanced tantric Buddhist practitioner. So he's kind of, they're all rich in symbolism. So like this staff, sometimes I find it very interesting when you show people pictures of Padmasambhava. Like we do this sometimes in the courses we run. We sort of show, some of you probably had this, done this exercise with Saroha. You kind of, at the end of the course, you show people Buddhist images and you ask them what they see. Showing people Padmasambhava is fascinating. Because what they, you know, they really dwell on the fact that there's severed human heads. They're like, look, he's got some skulls there. What's all that about? So like, what is that about? Well, it symbolises impermanence, transition, the fact that everything changes. It symbolises... the three kayas of the Buddha's existence, the three levels on which a Buddha exists. The thing about threes in Buddhism, as most of you know, there's so many different things threes can be associated with. You can't make it up. It could be the three jewels, it could be the three that, the three other. But yeah, it classically symbolises impermanence, change. So it's quite a strong symbol. You could say that's an aspect of Padmasambhava's character. He is a strong symbol. Kind of, boof, there you go. Some of us like that, some of us don't. One of the other characteristics which people can often just find very, in a sense, quite confusing is this, as Sangharakshita refers to it, celebrated, that's an interesting word, isn't it? The celebrated wrathful smile. So for wrathful smile, for those of you who don't know, he's famous for having this kind of like very intense, kind of like, you know, almost angry, very, very direct look on his face, but he's smiling at the same time. So what do we make of that? Well, in a sense, we make of that the fact that there's, well, energy and love. And in a sense, they need to be balanced. They need to be balanced in our own lives. So he brings energy, directness, vigour. But there's also love there. And, yeah, and and it's interesting which one we notice, which one we respond to, which one we see first. So, the kind of, you know, like this kind of wrathful, slightly angry, sort of, some of these statues, like this one's kind of got it a bit, you kind of have him with these really, like, big, sticky-outy, kind of, like, scary eyes, and people are like, ugh, that's a bit grim. Well, again, it's just very interesting what we respond to, because there is a smile there as well, but what do we see? What do we notice? Unsurprisingly, with our, at times, complicated relationships with authority and religion, we focus more on the wrathful look. And you could say it goes deeper than that. The human, evolutionarily speaking, life is hardwired to respond to threat more than praise. It doesn't matter how many nice mangoes there are to eat, one saber-toothed tiger results in you being dead. So in effect, if you have ever reacted to the fact that Padmasambhava looks a bit angry, it's kind of understandable, actually, because we're trying to read people all the time. Are you safe? Are you going to be kind to me? So is Padmasambhava going to be kind to us? Well, I trust that he is. Kind of but I couldn't quite tell you why. Well, I suppose because he's an enlightened figure, because he's meant to be. But sort of like on some levels, there's just something about the figure which I just sort of know that he is benign and kind. But we have to make our minds up about that for ourselves. Like some people love Padmasambhava, some people are completely indifferent and don't give a monkey's. Kind of fine. It's not like you have to like him. He doesn't mind. So yeah, so pressing on with the imagery, there's just so, there's, like Mahayana Buddhism, like symbolism is rich. So his hat, the gestures of his hands, they all mean something. So I suppose just to say two things which mean something for me personally, two or three things. Padmasambhava is the Buddhist figure that I meditate on officially every day. At a certain point, I remember, if you can see, his foot is kind of sticking out, his right foot is sticking out. That's the symbolism of that is he's engaged in the world, he's active. So he's got one foot in meditation and one foot going out, active. And it's funny, sometimes I sit, when I'm sitting meditating, and the importance of that becomes overwhelming. Actually, it's to the extent where I find it kind of impossible to conceive of being prepared to practice Buddhism, the Dharma, if it didn't have that explicit emphasis on engagement. You know, like, what is the point? Yeah, no disrespect, Buddha, with his feet, both feet up like that. But for me, it's like, oh, that is vital, you know, this active force of engagement. It's kind of, like I said, it's just sort of like completely crucial. And then, this is probably a much more personal reflection, quite often when I meditate on him, and it's particularly if you look at this image here, because it's very vivid, his black hair. Yeah, there's something about his black hair which can, sometimes when I meditate on him, it can be by far the most vivid part of the image. So that in itself is interesting, isn't it? One of the, as I often say to people, one of the best sections in What is the Dharma by Sangharakshita is where, when he talks about the nature of enlightenment. And he says, there's basically very little we can say about enlightenment, but what we can say tells us a lot about us. Yeah? So it's like, are you attracted to love, wisdom, peace, energy, freedom? Enlightenment is characterized by all of those things. Padmasambhava is characterized by all of those things. Which one you respond to tells us more about us than it does about the figure. So I find it quite funny that Padmasambhava has got long black hair, and I still, 16 years later, feel sad that I don't have long black hair. And I still look at Padmasambhava and go, oh. But in some ways, it's also, it's more than that, isn't it? It's a symbolism of kind of vitality, energy. Kind of like Samson, you know, that image of Samson with the long black hair. Just something very strong about it. Yep. So yeah, so there's just a few kind of words about his appearance, you know, that, and that is important because that's how we meet people, isn't it? We see them. And we instantly make something of them. We instantly have a sense of them. We evaluate. But you could say that hopefully one of the things that the Buddhist tradition supports us in doing is going deeper than that, going deeper than appearances. In a previous iteration of this talk, I wanted to talk about what we see in people and what we want from them. But I'm kind of decided against doing that. But so it's like, you know, we see someone and it's like, certainly, you know, one of the instant evaluations is like, well, what can they get me? I was kind of thinking about network marketing events. You go to a network marketing event and you're like, who are you? Are you important? What can you get me? So what can Padmasambhava get us? Yeah, yeah. No? Okay. Let's go back to Sangharakshita for a minute. Though I had never seen the figure of Padmasambhava before, it was familiar to me in a way that no other figure on earth was familiar. Familiar and fascinating. It was familiar as my own self, yet at the same time infinitely mysterious, infinitely wonderful, and infinitely inspiring. So that's spiritual presence, for want of a better word. And, like, it's funny, isn't it? Because it's like, well, spiritual presence is a value in its own right. Sangharakshita's, one of the things he says we have to, one of the observations he's made is, we live in an extremely totalitarian world. It's like, well, what am I going to get out of it? Why? What, you know, what do I get? What's it going to give me? Famously spoken about the spiritual community of the Sangha as having to fulfill no other purpose than its own existence. That in itself is value enough. Which I think is very true. And yet, sometimes we need a bit of a hand to know why something's important. So what does Padmasambhava, what could that spiritual presence mean or represent? In some ways, this is where I personally most connect with Padmasambhava. So what he represents is energy, transformation, tantra. And that's, yeah, like in some ways it's like, well, it's just, that is important. We're energy for, I think they're two separate qualities, actually. Like energy is the capacity to do, and transformation is that energy being directed towards something positive. So they are separate. Yeah, like, things can have energy without being transformative. Arguably, transformation without energy is impossible. And in a sense, that's the reason we place this emphasis on Padmasambhava. That's the reason why we have this day, is because we need energy. You know, energy is a central quality in practicing the Dharma. Energy is a central quality in anything. So how does Padmasambhava represent that? How does he communicate that? Well, in a sense, you've got his figure, you know, the sort of the dynamism, the richness, yada, yada, yada. But he also, it's kind of like what we connect with, what's important. Like for much of the rest of today is exploring how we engage our energies through meditation, through movement, through conscious resolution, and through ritual. So in some ways, I'm just setting the scene for us to kind of like have a go at engaging our energies. Because it's like I can't just stand here. Standing here and telling you about energy doesn't kind of make sense, does it? But something that I think is very important is kind of like what we connect with. Energy starts at home. So I had this, for me, felt like quite a significant experience a couple of years ago. I was kind of trying to engage more with my practice of meditating on Padmasambhava. And I was living at Padmaloka at the time, and I talked to this Padmavajra who's been meditating on Padmasambhava every day for nearly 40 years. Probably about 37 years or something like that. And I was saying to him, oh, kind of what book should I read? How do I get into Padmasambhava? I might have told you this story last year because it's important to me. And he was like, forget all of that. Like, tell me about you. Where do you connect? What kind of moves you or something like that? And so I ended up with a figure of Padmasambhava as a superhero. I did tell you this story last year. So, if you look at what did Padmasambhava do? Padmasambhava is mysterious. He goes somewhere, he saves the day, and then he disappears. Like, that's not like a superhero. That is a superhero. That's what superheroes do. Works for me, might not work for you. Yeah, so why? Why? Why are we here? Why does Sangharakshita place an emphasis on Padmasambhava? Because we need energy, and because we need to engage ourselves with practicing the Dharma, and that is much more important than whether you even vaguely interested in Padmasambhava. Padmasambhava does not care about whether you're interested in him. What he cares about is energy and engagement, and he doesn't give a monkey's what you call it. In the Life of Liberation, they would go further than this, in fact. There's an extended passage in the Life of Liberation where they're sort of evoking, where they're evoking life, where they're evoking reality. And basically, they come down to the point where they say that Padmasambhava is everything that is good. Yeah? So everything, every moment of creativity, every moment of energy and engagement, is a manifestation of Padmasambhava as a force in the universe. Like, they do this sort of, like, it's clearly, well, it clearly has a purpose, as well as clearly a sort of, like, a back reading to make Padmasambhava more important. But they sort of say, you know, in a previous life he was the Buddha, in a previous life he was this, in a previous life he was that. It's all about energy, all about engagement. And there's in this heroic vision of reality, or heroic, this sort of dynamic, meaningful vision of reality. Well, there's something in that, isn't there? Like, life has meaning. In the story itself, there's the arch villain, there's the bad guy, there's Marpa Nagpo, black liberation, kind of, for all the forces of kind of, they're not, well, evil, but kind of just delusion and hatred and greed. There's all these forces kind of manifesting into the world. And then there's the light and trying to transform them. And we can be part of that. We can be part of that process, part of that. We are part of that. That process is going on within us, within our world. And we can be, we've got a choice to the extent to which we or become conscious of that, you could say. When Sangharakshita first came back to the UK and was in London in the kind of mid-70s, he gave a famous talk about Padmasambhava. And in that, he's talking about, he really evokes this kind of like this battle of cosmic energies. And as part of it, he's kind of just saying, oh yeah, and those energies are strong in our world. The forces of ignorance, delusion, greed, aversion are strong in our world. And we have a choice about kind of joining the forces of good. I'm slightly conscious that I've kind of gone into this whole kind of superhero kind of battle against evil thing, and it's like I've kind of, some people might not find that language kind of tasteful, so I want to sort of, it's, you know, one of the defining characteristics of this is that it's, you know, when we think of good versus battling evil, we think about death and destruction, and that is not the characteristic that Padmasambhava brings. When Padmasambhava, one of his legendary functions is moving around Tibet, kind of pacifying the demons of Tibet. And as he pacifies them, he does not kill them. He befriends them. He charms them. He makes friends with them. He brings them gifts. Yeah, so he kind of, he meets, you know, this, yeah, Mike, I can't help it, you know, this like vast, evil creature kind of appears. And he doesn't, you know, he doesn't zap it with laser beams or kind of like hit it with big sides of a mountain. He kind of, he goes into it, he engages with it, and it off, he offers that aspect of reality something, and he says the energy that you are can be transformed and can be directed to positive ends for your benefit and the benefit of the world. Here, have a gift, guard this gift. So he sort of, you know, he loves, you know, Padmasambhava is love. So that's something of an introduction. You can, Padmasambhava is a figure which kind of knows no ends in a way. So there's something of a historical, the fact that he really did live, probably the most important thing about him, and people have found him important. Something about his appearance, the richness of it, the vivid, kind of like the vividness of it, the fact that his appearance in itself evokes energy. Spiritual presence, the need for energy and transformation. And in a sense, most importantly, that Padmasambhava represents engagement, the engagement of energy with love. Yeah, so it's like it's something that I think, you know, culturally we can find quite hard to comprehend. So it's like he's completely full on, but it's a completely full on with love. And that, in a sense, that is a mystery, something to get our heads around. And that he's inviting us to engage. He's inviting us to access our energy. Kind of, maybe I'll just finish there. So it's like Padmasambhava is about finding energy and liberating it and transforming it for the benefit of ourselves and the world. He invites that to do that within ourselves through meditation. He invites us to do that externally through transforming the world. Yep. And the practical, well, the practical is to find your own ways in, to find the ways of engaging our energy, find what moves and motivates us. That will be different for all of us. But as I say, the rest of this day is an opportunity to explore that, you know. Yeah, it's an opportunity to explore how some of the ways we could activate our energies. Thank you.